fine. Okay. What? They're technically, but I don't think we ever started on time. Not because I'm not here on time, but because... Well, people started coming late, and then... Okay. Fine. So, as we started last week, now we're moving towards case studies till the end of the year. Last week was somewhere in between. We were trying to sort of cover a modern methodological question sort of systematically through the lens of a test case, the case of religious Zionism as a factor in Pesach, through the Tshuvot of Rav Herzog and Israeli and the articles in from Machon Soman and Tchumen and in other journals about police forces on Shabbos. Today I want to move really, really, really to a test case. My card is over here, it's two pages. And I, you know, when I originally gave a series a few years ago in Columbia and in the Hillel, I think it was called like the Tshuvot that changed modern Pesach or something like that. And this was the first Tshuvah I did then also, and the first Tshuvah I'm going to do today. As we mentioned before, right, one of the goals we want to accomplish in the next few weeks is see how sort of all the theoretical issues that we dealt with in Pesach manifest themselves in complicated areas of Pesach, right? Not in your everyday run-of-the-mill Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Kashrus question, but in those issues where there's a clear sort of breakthrough in Pesach, and people are and Poskim are clearly thinking about how to reconceptualize a certain area, that's where you see how they actually implement the way they think about Pesach. So the first tshuva that I want to talk about, and really we're going to be focusing on that tshuva, there are other things here to sort of test out the effects of this tshuva on the world of Pesach, is the first tshuva that really dealt with the question, what do we do in the world of denominations? Right? Until 19th century, there was no such thing as a denomination. There were people who were from and people who were not from, or people who kept more mitzvot or less mitzvot, but pachot or yoter, there was one community. And people were religious in whatever way they were religious. Right? That's right. What changed after emancipation and things like that is the era of denominations. And that change, that presents a real serious sociological shift in the way Poskim have to even conceptualize the Jewish community. And Poskim in 19th century Germany, other places also, Germany and Hungary, but Germany was sort of at the fore of the issues, had to really figure out, what do we do? In 1844, the Conference of Reform Rabbis at Brunswick, and that was the beginning of really like a formal frontal statement by rabbis claiming to be a different denomination, and this led to a lot of political problems. Do we remain as part of the same community as them, or do we not legally? Or being a Jew had legal implications. It had implications in terms of taxes. And originally, you weren't allowed to split off. At some point, the government gave communities, originally Christians, the right to split off from the main community and create denominations. The reaction to that in Germany was a machlokas between Misham Shalfal Hirsch, who endorsed what was called Austrit, which was creating a separate community. He was opposed most prominently in Germany by the Rav of Würzburg, Rav Bamberger. But in addition to the political issues, there was an issue of halacha. How does this change how we think about halacha? Okay. So, a little bit of background from the Gemara very quickly, and then I want to go into the tshuva itself. So, we have a category in halacha of a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia, a Mumer, Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia. This is a lot of Nafkimnis L'Halacha, for example. Right, what can a Mumer do? Or what does he do?
He gets to go somewhere else, and where no one knows him, and
you know that. No. What is it? A Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia, right? He's a Pasul Eidos. If he touches wine, it's like a guy touched wine, and it has the status of Stam Yenam. Can't count for a minion. for any Davar Shebekedusha. Right, there are a lot of implications to a Mechal Shabbos Bevaresia. Right, so the Gemara and Irvin, the background for this, the Gemara says, Amravuna Izu Yisrael Mumar. What is a Mumar Zeh? Mechal Shabbos Bevaresia. Someone's Mechal Shabbos. Shemal Nachman Keman. Who is that like? Iker b'meir damar chashur l'davar echad chashur l'chol atara kula afil b'echam nikal yisur n'shabbatar anami. Said, who holds that Shabbos, that Michal Shabbos is unique in defining someone as a mumar completely? So you hold like b'meir that if you are suspect of violating one aviras, so you're automatically suspect on the whole Torah. So Shabbos shouldn't be unique. Yikra banan, hamri chashur davar echad, lo avi chashur l'chol davar kula, ad avi mumar lo tzuzuk chavim. And the Rabbanan say that it's only someone who is a mumar lo tzuzuk chavim who gets this unique status. Yeah, you're right. We're not talking about generally. We're not making a systematic claim about Mechalei Shabbos Bevaresia. Right, so the Gemara suggests at this point that we're talking about, is he able to participate as a Jew in making an Eruv? Right, a Jew is able to and say, look, I give you, I'm relinquishing my rights, and you can set an Eruv for a non-Jew, and for a Mumar, Mechal Shabbos Bevaresia, you have to actually rent it for him. Rashi Amar, Haitanu, the Chamira Le Shabbos Kavod Zara. Rashi said, no. Everyone agrees that Shabbos is like Avod, that Shabbos is unique, because Shabbos is like Avod Zara. Kiditanya, Mikem, Lo Kulchem, Pratla Mumar. Mikem, Bochem, Chilati, Lo Beumos, Menehem, Lavi, Yayin Adam, Hadom, Lehema, Mikanam, Mikam, Kamon, Poshi, Israel, Kedishiach, Shuva, Chutzman, Amumar, Nasach, Yayin, Vamachal, Shabbos, Mepharesia. And therefore you see other implications, La Lacha, such as a Russia is allowed to bring a carbon or send a carbon in the base of Mikdash, but someone who is Mechal Shabbos Bevaresia can't. So the Gemara said, "Agufa kasha, Amar mikem lo kulchem lo hotzias amumar v'hadir tana mikadlan karmans boshi Yisrael halakasha reishim amar kol dera kula mitzias amar dera echad em asev chutz men amumar nasav yain haimunar amumar hechidami imar kol dera hain reishim le dera echad kasha mitziasa lavach gamar chutz men amumar lenasich cholchal shabbos v'ezia alma v'odizara v'shabbos ki adad yinenu shmamina." And so the Gemara first establishes that Chilul Shabbos is sui generis. That Avodah Zarah we sort of understand. Why, if you keep the whole Torah but you worship another god, then you've removed yourself, mi klal Yisrael. We sort of get that. But the Gemara asserts that the same is true of Chilul Shabbos. Okay? Yeah, Yair.
Is there a difference
between Mumar and Meshumad? I mean, Meshumad technically is usually used as apostate, or someone who actually converts out, or identifies with another religion. But Mumar is the... Mumar, you'll find more in Chazal, Meshumad, you know, you find later on. Meshumad is like a favorite word in the Rishonim. But yeah, they're not necessarily different. If you want, like, there's a whole Sefer written just on the notion of Mumar in every single area that comes up in Torah. It's like 400 Simanim or something like that, where he deals with the differences. It's called Kovitz Nidachim. Wonderful. It's available in Hebrew books. But yeah, for our purposes, not really different. Okay? Fine. Now, so this creates a serious problem. In a world where not that many people are Mechal Shabbos, this is not such a big deal. In the beginning of the world of denominations, it is a big deal because Reform Jews don't keep Shabbos. Like, pretty simple. We're not yet getting to, obviously, denominations, you know, become much more numerous as the years go on, and then, you know, you get conservative and you get, you know.
We're not talking about a whole category of Jews that don't keep Shabbos versus just like individual.
Right, being the first time we're really talking about it as a systemic problem. Right, you don't just have one person here, Po Visham, who's Michal Shabbos. You suddenly have an ideology that's developing which doesn't recognize the laws of Shabbos. And this is a completely different world. Again, conservative, which is much later, and this sort of discussion is more complicated because they do recognize Shabbos, not necessarily the way Orthodox recognize Shabbos, right? And then, of course, what happens in the 1950s driving tshuva, and then what happens when it's very strange. Okay, and then what? And then Okay. And then, you know, the... Anyways. But yeah, it's the first time when we have systematically an entire group of people who are not bound to Hilchos Shabbos, who feel not bound to Hilchos Shabbos. And this creates a serious problem. So the question is, what do we do with them? So... Okay, leave the next two sources. We'll go back to them when we need them. But let's look at the tshuva, okay? So, should binyan siyana chadashot simon chav gimel. Now, first thing, right? Someone read me the first line in the tshuva.
Psakim shelo lahalacha lamaisa.
Right. First line in the tshuva. Psakim shelo lahalacha lamaisa. Right. What I'm about to say is not practical halacha. This is a theoretical discussion. Despite that statement, which there's a little bit of a question whether he actually wrote it or his son wrote it when he edited the book. In Judith Bleich's dissertation, in the dissertation, she makes no indication that this is not him. I think the footnoter in it claims it's not. I don't really know. Judith Bleich wrote her dissertation on Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger. She doesn't mention that he didn't write it, but she assumes that he did. Okay. One more thing before we start it, just background, right? Again, just to place Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger. Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger is born in 1798, eventually becomes the Rav of Altoona, which is one of the large cities in Germany, right? The Kilot of Germany in the early modern period are called the Kilot Ehuv. Many of them are called the Kilot Ehuv, which is the Kilot Altoona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. So he becomes the Rabbi of Altoona and he has a very sort of complicated relationship with the reformers. He's on the one hand very much a critic. What?
When is it?
When does?
Yeah, when's he around?
He's born 1798, right? And then, you know, reform is starting to gain steam in the early 19th century, again coming to a fore at the conference of reform rabbis in Brunswick in 1844. So. On the one hand, he is really one of the prime fighters against reform. His students take up the charge. His students, most famous students, are Rosham Shmuel Hirsch and Rezerl Hildesheimer. Right? Rosham Shmuel Hirsch, everyone knows. His attempts to fight reform, both on a philosophical level in terms of his writing, also politically in his endorsement of Austrian. Rezerl Hildesheimer has a slightly different model. What does he do? He starts a rabbinical seminary. Now, Rezerl Hildesheimer's prime Talmud is? And David Zvi Hoffman. Right? Prime Talmud, really. Right? David Zvi Hoffman actually takes over the seminary. So that's sort of placing where we are. Okay? So on the one hand, he is a critic and he fights them. On the other hand, he does try to bring them in. He doesn't try to reject them on a personal level, which is not necessarily the case of other Rabbanim at the time. If you want discussion of sort of a broader view of Yaakov Edlinger, it's so Judith Bleich in her dissertation, chapter 4, is devoted to his interaction with the Reform movement, and then she has a longer piece in the Orthodox Forum, Jewish Tradition and the Non-Traditional Jew, the second chapter. She has it's like a 100-page article or no, 80 pages. 80-page article, where a little bit broader than just Yaakov Edlinger. Okay, fine. To the tshuva. Psakim shelo lahalacha lamaaseh. And if you look here, I put in brackets, that if you look in the Minchas Elazar, who's the biggest critic of this tshuva, she goes, V'yofa asa hamotzi l'or v'nyonsiyon jehemet ha-tshuva b'simon chav gimel shibnaz mikodem v'simon zeh shem'az v'hala ha-vei la'alacha v'lo lamaaseh. The Minchas Elazar, who really doesn't like the tshuva, said, and it was great that the printer put shelo lahalacha lamaaseh at the top of the tshuva because the tshuva is wrong. Okay? You can already see that this is the Rebbe Mimunkach. So you can already see this tshuva is going to be very controversial. So let's read it. Right here, he quotes. It's written in Altoona, to his Mechotni Harav, whatever Shmariyahu Tzukerman. So Masha Kasa Kavat Taraso Nero Yair. Shehu hayanoeg leisur b'shtias yain tnagabo yisrael mechal Shabbos perhesia mneishu mumar lechal hatorah kula. You said that you didn't drink wine that was touched by someone who's mechal Shabbos b'farasya. V'ochiach gain mishurim abit shevi mikudas hakasef laser v'shtias yaijnago bo karaim hunei sheheim mechalim es hamoados v'heim ak mechal shavatot. And you proved it from the truth of the mabit is quoted in the kudas hakasef. Amnam yesh mi shecholik alav lochein shaloti ich dati baze. But some people argue. So you ask me. So lefi aniyo dati. Hadin ima. So he starts off. It seems to me that halacha is like. But you, the claimant to mechal Shabbos b'varhesi who can mumar al chal tara dino ka'ovit kochavim. Since a mechal Shabbos is a mumar, he's like an ovit avodah zarah. Efter shafilo mar shal shavim kudas hakesef sham disrele the karaim enam osrim mo de bazeh the karaim enam mechal in shabbatot rak moado v'nei shacholkim al kviyos shalanu v'shavim mechal moado mechal Shabbos lo svirele. And it could be that they're even in this sense worse than the Karaim. Because there the Marshal is cholik that Karaim don't make your wine. Because the Karaim only are cholik on Yom Tov. Because they don't agree with the rabbinic system of setting up Yom Tov. But they don't argue on the existence, fundamentally, of Shabbos. Therefore, it could be that they're even worse. Aval mechal Shabbos mamish tulukulei almehevi mumr l'chol Torah. After Shagav Marshal Modeb, but maybe a real Mechal Shabbos, everyone would agree. V'ikol Meimer Kevan Dixeres Yenam Hum Bishum Benosem, and maybe you'll tell me that look, since Stam Yenam is Dixera Atu Benosem, meaning it's Dixera to prevent you from marrying the children of the non-Jews. V'arei Benot Mechal Shabbos Lo Nesru, and the daughters of Mechal Shabbos are not Aser. Zaino, that's not a good excuse. Dimkein mumar lavos kochavim lo yaser yain v'shtiya. Because then, even a Jew who is an idol worshiper shouldn't aser the wine because there's no still his children are Jewish and therefore there's no problem of intermarriage. Ulufi ma damrin bechulin oser v'tzarach lomar k'mash goes around the chiddush of sham k'mosh etik gamal kavatarasu neru yair kevan deve kikuti gamar hu bechal diras and aval pi shein. Bivinosav is nerchasnus v'imkain who adin mumur al chal Shabbos b'faras yevchein kaz v'rajba b'shut haviyah beis Yosef the mumur al chal Shabbos b'faras ya yaino yain nesach. Okay, so far he's matzik the problem. His pashtus, you're right. If someone is mechal Shabbos, his wine is aser. V'hine. Now, I'm going to take a step back. Okay, we said right. Suddenly we're faced with a fundamentally different situation that Jews had faced in a very long time, if ever. I mean, I guess sort of there was denominationalism in antiquity. What?
Nitzdukim.
Right, meaning in antiquity, like, you know, Nitzdukim and the early Christians. I mean, eventually that became a new religion, but the Christians.
Completely different situation.
It's a different situation, right? But at some level. But so now, what would you do? Right? Let's think methodologically here now. Right, you have a rule that Machal Shabbos Beferes Yadino Ka'ovid Avodah Zarah is a Mumar L'Chol Torah Kula is Yeno Yain Nesach, and now you have a group of Machal Shabbos Beferes Yah, a group that ideologically thinks it's Mutzer to Machal Shabbos Beferes Yah. So now, what question are you going to ask yourself?
Wait, do we cut them off or keep them close?
But one question you're going to that's going to be bugging you in the back of your mind is, right? Like, forget the local issue. How do I want to relate to them, right? But let's, purely halakhically, before we even get into the right to the other to the social factors, which we will be mechased to, but right, purely legally, right? What do we have? To, right, what is the posuk going to be looking for when he's facing a unprecedented situation with what seems to be a classical category? Yaakov.
Are the underlying
assumptions
of the
cases
the same?
Right. Right, you're going to say, well, we have Mechal Shabbos now, we had Mechal Shabbos then, but why is a Mechal Shabbos considered Ka'ovid Avodah Zarah, and are our Mechal Shabbos the same type of Mechal Shabbos that fall into that category? Right, so one is simply going to be right analyzing whether the sociological shift you have is relevant to the halachic question by analyzing what was the underlying reason for the original argument. Right? We've talked about this before, that sociological change can be very important in Psak, right? Because even if the principles stay the same, if there's a dramatic enough change in the realia, then the principles will be applied fundamentally different. Now, what else are you going to do? What does a good posek always do when he's faced with a totally new situation? Where's the first place he looks? What does he look for? What? Mimilim Acherot, what does he look for? He looks for precedent. Right? He looks for, it's a new situation, but is there any situation that was similar? Right? Because you don't want to go out on your own. You want to, even if you're going to assess the situation as having changed, well now, if it changed, you have to define it in a new way. And if you are defining it in a new way, you're always going to look for a model that you can apply to the situation.
Didn't you already get the one you referred back to the Tarim?
Well, he hasn't said anything yet, but hold it, right? So, he's going to do those two things. So, if I ask you, first question, why is a Mechal Shabbos Befarhesia Dino Ke'ovid Avodah Zarah? Let's look at Rashi. Right, Rashi says, Rashi, Mechulim Dafei, second source. Allah Vach Gamra, Kablan Gamran Poshi Yisrael, B'mumr L'davar Echad, Chutz V'namur L'Naseh Chesayayin, Ulchal Shavazos, Dahani Chamire, Alma, Mumar Lavoz Kulchavim, Kimur L'chol Adara Kuladami, Hai Tana Chamire, Le Shavaz Kavaz Chavim, De Ha'oved Avoz Kulchavim, Kofir B'Kadosh Baruch Hu, V'amechal Shavaz, Kofir B'Masav, Why is Mechal Shabbos considered an Ovid Avodah Zarah? Because Shabbos is the bris Beini Uvein Bnei Yisrael Osi Leolam. So it's a denial of God and it's a denial of creation. Great. So now, what's the problem? What? Do they?
Well, but nobody at that point is necessarily denying. I mean, that's a very Greek thing wasn't such a problem.
Good. The earlier form are not denying creation. They're not denying God. We haven't quite gotten yet to the very clever arguments that allow for religion in the absence of God. We haven't quite gotten there yet, right? Reform and conservative, we're not talking that, right? It will eventually be adopted by parts of reform, but like we're talking like the person who really went to town with trying to justify Judaism without removing all the theological implications, really, really, really was Reconstructionism. Right? Reform has elements of it, but you know that was like we're talking Kaplan, you know, mid 20th century. Now, can you prove it to me? How do you know? Very simply, that Mechal Shabbos are not necessarily cholek on the existence of God or Maaseh Bereishis. Give me a good proof. Yeah. And what do they do in shul?
Pray God.
Good, right? Very good. So one thing is that right, the facts may not line up. In fact, they might be Mechal Shabbos to go to shul. In fact, they might. What else might they do? What do they do in shul? What do you say in shul?
Hi, how are you doing?
Blessed are you, O Lord.
What else do you do? What is the pinnacle of any
Kiddush?
Kiddush! What does it say in Kiddush? Right? What does it say in Kiddush? Good! Right? Okay, so maybe they'll say it from a microphone, which may or may not be Asur Midaraisa. Probably, if it's Asur Asur Rabbanon, whatever!
Electricity.
I should be careful. Last time I talked about electricity, Joel Roth posted that he thinks that I, apparently jokingly, that I don't think electricity is Asur on Shabbos. Then I emailed him. He's like, no. I was totally agreeing with you. It was just, that was meant sarcastically because everyone always critiques me because he says the same thing. That it's not. It's Asur. We just don't know why. Okay. Now, so that's in terms of the issues involved. Now, second question is, okay, well, what would be a precedent for this type of denomination who doesn't recognize Shabbos per se, but they do recognize God and creation?
The Karaites.
So now let's go to the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Mi she'eino modeh b'Torah shebal peh, eino zokin mamrei amar b'Torah." Somebody who just doesn't believe in the Torah shebal peh, is not a zokin mamrei. Alrei hein b'arei zeh b'chalal apikorsim isazu b'chalal adam. He's just a heretic, and anyone can kill him. Hey, not getting into it. Don't even. Me'achar shenit parseim shu kofer b'teres shabal peh, moridin oso v'lo malin. Once we know he's a kofer, if he falls into a pit, you try to actively get him into that pit, and you leave him there, right? You don't take him out. V'areu kishar kol api karsin v'omrin ein tarim den hashamayim. Yep. Good. I am not passing this halacha to my. What? Don't worry. We'll get to why we don't pass on this way, which we don't. Halacha gimel. Bame dvarim amurim. But when is this? Beish shekafar b'terush baal peh. This is when someone himself decides to deny the Torah. The first people who decide, we don't believe in Torah Shabbal Peh, we don't believe in God, we don't believe in whatever, like Tzadok and Baitos in that first generation. But their children, v'noldu bin akarim, v'gadlo osam al daitam, and they were raised amongst the karaim, harehu ke, tinuk shenishba, b'neyem, they are as if, they are tinuk shenishba. What is a tinuk shenishba? It's the Gemara in the seventh paragraph. Shabbos is a long discussion that the Gemara has asked the questions. If someone is shogag or Shabbos echad, if he remembers the Shabbos, but he forgets that something's a malacha, or he forgets all the malachos, or he forgot all the malacha, or he knew the malacha, but forgot it was Shabbos. Right, how many karbanos does he bring? And then the Gemara has a case, a tinuk shenishba. What about somebody who was captured when he was young, so he doesn't know he's Jewish? So the Gemara there says, right, he's basically shogeg. He's perpetually shogeg. It's some mixture, almost shogeg, onto something like that. He's chayav one karban on his whole life. Okay? So now, the Rambam already, who begins to deal with the Karaites, which is sort of a denomination of sorts, says that the children of Karaites, second, third, tenth generation Karaites, are Tinoko Shenishbu, because what's the Yisod of Tinok Shenishba? That he grew up, Meikara, without any knowledge of Torah. Right, so he said that he's like an onus. He's actually formally a shogeg, but it's somewhere shogeg onus, something like that. And even if he sees Jews and he knows their religion, he's still an onus. Why? Because it wasn't like he didn't know there were Jews. The Tztukim had a different ideology, and they taught their children this is correct, and other things are not. And so we should actually bring the children of the Karim back b'tshuva. Okay, so now let's go back to Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger. Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger has this moment that we're going to get to in the tshuva right now, where the light goes off and he says, wait, this was the theoretical halachic discussion, but Mitzios has changed. Now I've got to re-examine it, and then if I'm going to re-examine it, I've got to figure out what to do with the conclusion I reach. So, v'hine ad ko dibarnu meikaradin. This is the theoretically true. Eich ladun mechal shabbos parhesya. But wait a second, aval leposhei Yisrael shebizmanenu. But the reformers, essentially, in our time, lo yadana ma'odim mehem. What am I going to do with them? Achar she'be'avonoseinu harabim pasha baheres l'rov ad she'birubam chil Shabbos nasa keheter. The disease has spread to the point where chil Shabbos to them is mutter. Im lo yesh lehem din omer mutter. Maybe I would just say that they're an omer mutter. Shirak karov l'mezidhu, which is not great, but it's Karov Lemezid. That's not obvious, right? Omer Mutter is really Shogeg, but it's a Shogeg which is Karov Lemezid. So in certain contexts, it's just Shogeg. By murder, for example, it's a Machlokas in the Gemara. Is it Karov Lemezid, Karov Lanos? It might be different in Znos. It's a Shogeg which is Karov Lemezid. V'yesh bohem shemispalim tefillah Shabbos. And a lot of them, Davin, Umikachim Kiddush Hayom, they say Kiddush. V'achar kach mechal and Shabbos melachas daraisa derabanan. But then they go out and they mechal Shabbos. V'arei mechal Shabbos nechshav kamumr bevad v'bneisha kofer b'Shabbos kofer b'brio b'borei. And the only reason that you are considered, that someone is considered a kofer because a mumar because he's mechal Shabbos is because it reflects a denial of God and creation. V'zeh mode al yedek tefila v'kiddush. But they don't deny it. Umagam. So the model already breaks down even with the first generation reform. Kavachomer, their children, the second generation are like the Rambams, right? Karaim the Stukim don nechshavu kimumarim avo bishem echal and Shabbos v'bneisha ma'isavos en biyadein v'hein kitinok shenish b'levein over the kochavim kimavuar. And many of the sinners in our generation are like them. And they're even better than the Karaim of the Rash, who, that he held that they were that they made one Yain Nesach. The fact that the Karaim denied the Kedushas Moados was just the tip of the iceberg. They also didn't have Mila. With Priya, they had Mila, no Priya. They don't do marriage the way we do. Vazero, Poshim, Shemanei, Lopartsu. And at least at this point, the reform had not yet breached those boundaries. L'cheinir, L'fiyani, Yizdaidi, Hamachmir, L'hachshiv, Nigiyaz, Yayin, Shal, Poshim, Alolus, Tamyenam, Tavol, Abracha. Therefore, I would say, look, you don't want to touch their wine, fine. Achein, gam lemekilim yeshem ha'mashi yismechu. But the people who don't want to, don't. Im lo shem avur alanu sheyodei dinei Shabbos umei yispanov lechalo b'nei asara miYisrael. Unless you know that he publicly, actively is mechal Shabbos in front of a minion. Shezevadei kemomer gomor v'negiyas yeno asur kein nir lefin esdaidi akotan Yaakov. So, I love this tshuva because this becomes probably the most important tshuva in the last 150 years, 200 years. And how long is it? Pachorich had one paragraph. Right? But it highlights so much of the halachic process, especially when the halachic process is faced with new realities and with a tremendous amount of pressure. Right? Which is, right, as you saw, there's that light bulb moment, right? He has half the tshuva, there's a Mechal Shabbos for Hesia, he's a mumar, obviously you can't touch his wine, and then suddenly, but wait, there's an extreme social change that has happened that changes the principles, the underlying principles of Mechal Shabbos. The classical Mechal Shabbos is a kofer b'borei, kofer b'maisa breishis, and these are not. Also, once you start denominations, whatever you argue at the first generation, the second generation, is fundamentally different, and you have to find a category for them, and the category he comes up with is Tino Chinishba. Ilan.
Is it so much that he feels the growing pressure of this denomination, and he knows that he has to engage and deal with the issue, or is he simply doing, it seems more like he's simply saying, you know, just in the level of, you know, simple halacha, that's...
I'm not claiming, right, there is a lot of building pressure, that's not the point. Meaning, he... Even simple halacha, right?
No, he doesn't have to be make. He's not being make it already.
Oh no, it's not the kula. It's that, right? We're not talking. I mean, it happens to come out with a lot of kulas. The point being is that he's faced with, right? This tshuva is just sort of a siman for him of a systematic change or dramatic sociological change. Right? The fact that
it's not really a change in an evolution of the system as much as it is.
In social reality, yeah.
To that new reality.
Correct. And if you remember, what I mean, right, Clapper likes saying that, and I've mentioned this before, right, that psak is the interface between the theoretical halacha and reality. Right? You can be a brilliant lamdan and come up with new theoretical positions, and in that way you can change the halacha mikubelet. Alternatively, you could be a very straightforward classic lamdan, but you could be a very creative reader of reality, in which case right? You could be not at all a creative theoretical halachist and still have be a very dramatically sort of groundbreaking posek, right?
Two ways to evolve.
I agree with you. The Binyan Tzion here is not, he is making a few legal claims here, but yeah, his fundamental claim is not about the change of theoretical halacha. It's a recognition of how much a change in the sociological reality can change pre-existing halachic categories. Right? I mean, he in fact finds precedent for the Tinok Shenishba, which is the Karaim. But this tshuva is his recognition, and by the way, that's why it's Shalola Chalav Lamaza. If he did write it, why did he write it? Because he recognizes more than just a small little issue by Gai Nesef. He's presenting a theoretical model to deal with a very large group of Jews. But yes, this is why I wanted to read tshuvot. Right? This is why I wanted to take test cases, because you see that here, fundamentally what's going on and what's changing. Why is this tshuva groundbreaking? Not fundamentally because of the legal arguments. But this is like the difference between me and Alex. Right? I've talked to Alex before, the Binyan Tzion. The Binyan Tzion, and for Alex, who's much more of a lambda than right, and much more interested in the lambda side, he said, why is it such a big kiddush? It's essentially the Rambam about Karaim. Right? For me, who I'm involved in Psak, right, I'm much more interested in Psak. Right? It's groundbreaking in the sense that his application of the Rambam to his current reality was a paradigm shift, practically, like Lemaisa and Halacha. And that's why I like, right, this tshuva highlights that struggle. Right? It's not, Psak is not always about the theoretical, it's equally about being able to understand reality and figuring out what model applies. Right? He could have just said, look, B'chal Shabbos Parahes, yeah? That's it. Right? But he's not, and remember, he is also a theoretical lamdan here. He's going farther than the Rambam, right? He's claiming, but the Karaites might still Asr wine. This is not going to Asr wine because they're even better than the Karaites, right? There is some argumentation, but in a Hanami, right? That's not what's driving the tshuva, yeah.
Just would the Binyan Tzion say that like any Stam Jew now who breaks?
Hold that thought.
Okay.
First, just very quickly. Two more tshuvos here, just to watch the hishtalshelut of this psak. Okay, the first tshuva, and this comes in more than one tshuva. Reb David Tzvi Hoffman. Again, Reb David Tzvi Hoffman is a grand talmud of the Binyan Tzion. To just give you an example of how this becomes accepted in Germany. So, sheila b'minyan shalanu yesh echad oshayim shemchal and shabbos for hesia lo levan lachdam tm osim mugmar vafilu kiddush vavdala inam osim ishar letzarf b'minyan. Can we take Michal and Shabbos and count them for a minyan? They don't even make Kiddush and Havdalah. Okay? So what did he say? Tshuva Primogodim. The Michal Shabbos for Eshe and Mitzar for a minyan. The Primogodim says you can't count someone who's Michal Shabbos for a minyan. V'chein kaseh b'shuvas kacham tzvi. V'ath b'shilis yayivitz. Simon Memtes, Mashmil called Avarian Mitzarfin, meaning calls Mashmil Nidu, whom he called Makam, because of the fears, you got Machal Shabbat, Rezi Mitzarfin, Vashar Motiv is a Dane Mitzarfin, Vine Mashmil Kozlan Yin Zevish, and Meshav Davar, Shoser, the Chazan Magan Avram, Mishu Rash Berezi, and Mizam Nil Lover, Easy, Vishut Rashban, Shehavi Vishem, Shut Dorsh Lachian, does a Dafka Bumar Lachas, Uviyamenu, Enos Lachas. Alright, so he says, yes, you can count him for a minion, but I saw the Chuvas Rashban, who said that that's not true, be a menu, because they're not lahaches. V'tamua. I don't get it. The lahaches, I feel be'echav mishar haveres in retzarafinoso. Lahaches, if someone doesn't have a lahaches, it doesn't matter what avera he does. He's pasul. And that, gam hevi gam shu rashban, b'shem likutei chever, shachar shagavar bala yizroa, ein koch vede lahorid, kohen gaza, etc. V'ayin sham ozim in kuf lamates, shuva, so he said, well, he quotes Mari Assad. So Mari Assad suggested, he's actually from Hungary, he suggests that maybe we could come up with a technicality that would get us out of problems, is maybe someone's only Michal Shabbos Baresia if he does it in front of 10 Yisrael. Sheish Harbi Acharim Sovrim Daha, the Mumar L'Chal Shabbos, and Mumar L'Chal Tura, Rakhmi D'Rabbanan, because maybe it's only D'Rabbanan, and therefore if we're not sure that he's Michal Shabbos in front of 10, it's a Savik D'Rabbanan, Hayotzi Michal Anal Shalpi Din Michal Shabbos Baresia, Eim Yisrael Minyan. Shalpi Alacha, you shouldn't count her a minyan. Ach, Bizman Azeh, but in our days, Noag in Lahakel, we, our minog is Mimego, Af Eretz Ungaran, Umash Gaza Beretz. Did I skip a line? No, yeah, Umash Gaza Beretz Ashkenaz. Kosher came Beretz Ashkenaz. V'zachruni shepam ira achaz ira. And I remember once happened that avilus al ish echad shechanuto b'zuch l'shabbos, that someone was in avilus who worked on Shabbos. V'echad mibalei batim shil kilatenu kala das Israel v'yard lifnei ateva v'beis hakneses shil kilatenu achagav v'yad al ratzos azel l'fayish lo yeired. And he tried to daven for the Amud because he was an Avel, and the rabbi, the Gabbai said, no, you know, he knew how to get him not to do that because the people would speak badly. So he went to a different shul. And even though the Gabbai there is also from, he didn't stop him. And I asked him, why didn't you stop him? That's the minhag in base medrash. Ain monim v'nerel fnei ateva hanashim she b'miskaram pazuch b'shabes. Came on sharabanim d'sham shahayu anshe shem omichu. And since the rabbis there who were great people didn't protest, mistamayat time inu kamimam, they must have had a reason. V'asher shesam chalzem asher kazuv gam kim b'shut binyan tina chadashos simin chav gimol nir chal shabes b'zmaninu nechshavim katz ketina chenivu b'nei nachrem b'nei shabes zinu arabim rov yisrael b'arzinu chal shabes. And maybe the reason is because they rely on the Binyan Tzion, which is very mistaber. So what do you see from his shuv already? That two generations after the Binyan Tzion, it's just what people do. Right? There are just many rabbis. Right? The Rav David Zvi Avin just looked around and said, oh look, there are a lot of shuls who do it. Why are they doing it? It must be that the Binyan Tzion has become mikubal at this point. This is also a fun tshuva for that reason, right? And I also heard, because remember, America didn't have rabbis, so they're getting their psak from Europe. That he said that those people in America, beginning of the reform movement in America, also they are also and therefore we can count them for a minion. And he continues in that vein. So you see, right, two generations in, not only has this tshuva become basically accepted in a lot of places in Germany, it's spread across the Atlantic to America because denominations are starting to spread. People are trying to figure out what to do with it everywhere. They're contacting people in Europe. And slowly this tshuva, which was written, Shalom la'alacha l'maseh, becomes Allah Maisa. Right? By the time you get to the Igros Moshe, he takes it to the Pasha. Binyan Aliyah L'Torah Lo Shomer Torah. Whatever Aliyah is L'Torah Mishen or Shomer Shabbos. He named Etzab Din, right? Mekra Din. You can't do it. Right? But you skip down three lines. Aval Udafka B'Kofrim Dimeino Kofrim Sheish L'Amun Vashem Yisbach Achshu Avaryan Al Yisurin Afal Al Shabbos Chamura B'Shvila Parnasasu Shartayvos Havya B'Rchazo Bracha U'Mi'uchavin Lanos Amen Acharel Mochi De'achem HaShomim. The only time was in there Mechalei Shabbos, but our Mechalei Shabbos are only doing it for Litayavon, but they are, right, it's just mutter. Here he doesn't use the word Tinek Shanish, but he does in other Chuvos, but, right, pretty straightforward. He does. Next line, Vilchein, Limaisa, Leila Kofrin Mamish, and Likro, Litar, Lolam, Afsh, Grasim, Bamitzad, Shikain, Chon, Chom, Yav, Sam, Rasham, Vahim, Kitinok Shanishba. Dal kol panim kevin she'ena ma'amim ha'rei shem ha'kadosh baruch hu etzlam kedvaram ba'alma hu v'hu kivlo shem ha'kadosh she'ena bracha ve'im heim ma'aminim ba'ashem k'razo av she'em ba'alei avir ha'shem l'krozim b'tera. But here he adds a caveat, and here's where you always have to be careful, is that always be careful not to take a category and run with it without thinking about whether it applies. Because what does he say? Counting for a minion, not a problem, because they're tinok shenishba. But what about getting an aliyah per se? So, what does someone who gets an aliyah do? Right, he says, right, he expresses directly his belief in God. Now, let's say someone's a tinek shenishba but doesn't believe in God. So, it's still a problem because he may not be guilty, but his bracha is still meaningless. Right, because he doesn't believe that which he's saying. So, Rav Moshe, right here, on the one hand, takes it kedavar pashut, that a non-religious Jew is manazeh, is a tinuk shenishba, but he points out that don't take that category too far. If in fact he doesn't believe, he still can't get an aliyah. Or the only way we can talk about it is if he's the type of tinuk shenishba that we're talking about in the Binyan Tzion. Someone who believes in God, believes in creation, he just follows a different halacha or no halacha. But if he actually ideologically doesn't identify, then we have a problem. He may not be guilty, may not be stamina, but giving an aliyah where he has to actively articulate a belief, that's already going to be a problem, even if you accept Tinoch Shenishba. Yeah, Amos.
What about, let's say you have a firm person, you don't know why, but let's say it's a firm person who keeps halakha, but they also don't believe. Are you going to ask every time...
So those are two separate questions. Right? One is the theoretical question. The answer to that is an obvious yes, it's usher. If someone doesn't believe in Hashem, I don't care if he's orthoprax, he can't be called for an aliyah, can't be counted for a minion probably, right? That's straightforward. Whether we should go around asking, we have a chazaka is an interesting question, right? Pashtas, we have a chazaka. But yeah, someone who's, I think this is obvious.
But is he saying... We would have a chazaka the other way.
No, he just said, if you know, right? I mean, he said, if we know, if we assume that they, and God, right? But, you know, that's always the practical problem, is how do you figure it out? I don't think Rav Moshe thinks you should carry out an inquisition on that level. Okay. Fine. So, this is just sort of step one in this tshuva, right? It starts out as a chiddush, as a recognition of a different sociological reality. It slowly, as you see, becomes psak within two generations in Germany, spreads to America, spreads everywhere. By the time you get to Rav Moshe, it's obvious. Of course, Rav Moshe, as a good posik, also recognizes limitations. Okay. Yeah.
What is a Reform Jew? I'm not asking, like, the definition of what he does. Is, you know, like a conservative Jew just does, you know, like, what's it called, lights the menorah, whatever, like, he does kids.
In the time of Binyan Tzion, what you're talking about, and we'll talk about this in a minute, what you're talking about, it starts with liturgical changes, right, and then, but it develops into a belief that Torah isn't binding, and...
What's their ideology, like, if the Torah isn't binding, then
It's changed a lot over the time. You can read, Reform Judaism has had 100 different, you know, it started with... One of their first platforms was anti-Zionism, right? This is change, right? This was a big fight in the Reform movement, and Reform in Germany was different from Reform in America. Trying to pin down exactly what it is hard. Not something that's not worthwhile if you want to understand it, but it's hard. Look, if you want to read about it, you can read any of these people who are talking about, you know, the history in that period. There's a lot of good articles written about that period and the reactions to it, right? The reactions of the modern Orthodox and where they agreed and disagreed with the Reform, right? There's a good article by David Ellenson. David Ellenson's done a tremendous amount of work on this. He was the head of HUC, right, the Reform movement, but his scholarship is in modern Orthodoxy. Michael Silber has done work on the reaction of Haredi Judaism, or the invention of a tradition, as he calls it. Judith Blake does a lot of work with it because she's dealing with that period. And then in America, there's like... And you can read, there's several chapters devoted to this in Jonathan Sarna's book on the history of America. Good book. All those were good. It wasn't Lee Kuva, Le Fouquet, the other ones.
Like on Torah, Shebichtav, how could you say that they believe in God and that they...
Some believe in God, but they don't believe in Torah, or they believe in...
So like, on the same hand, can I give a Christian the same deal? Like if he
of course. Hold it for... A minute. But obviously, I want to have a discussion about it in a minute. Let me just get in a few more halakhic points, and then we'll talk about some of the problems that have raised, we haven't raised yet, but I want to talk about it. Yeah? Okay. Fine. Just a few more points here. Now, just to see some of the critiques, as we mentioned, this is not obvious that the Binyan Tzion is correct, and the sort of first person to really challenge it, as we already saw in the bracketed part, the thing I put above, is Minchas HaLazer, the Rabbi Mimunkach. He's not in Bar Ilan, so I just gave you a few pieces of Rabbi Ovadia and his critique of the Minchas HaLazer. So, Ulam Reisi Bishun Minchas HaLazer, Shikas of Lidchos Di Reagon Binyan Tzion, the Maima Hani Kiddush Betvila Kemishchal Shabbos B'Malacha, V'chi Yeshvisa L'chati Shabbos, Yishtiku Advarim Shalom Yomru L'Hakel Yidei Zeb Maga Yeno. So his first critique is, who cares if he makes Kiddush? If he does Malacha, so he's not really keeping Shabbos. So what does Rav Ovadia respond? V'ein Varav Mokachim, Shesov Sovein Adoma Kol Kachal, Kovar Mais Reisha, that's very nice. Right, but, and right, you see here, what we're talking about is, do you follow the formal definition, or do you follow the substantive one here? Right, what does Minchas HaLazer say? What's the category here that we're looking to figure out? Is who is Mechal Shabbos? And what is the esod of the Binyan Tzion's claim? The Mechal Shabbos is not a Sibah, it's a Siman. It's a siman to the fact that you're kofar in God and Maaseh Bereishis. So then Chazal Azar says, look, he's still over Malacha, which means he's a Machal Shabbos. And the Ben Yonzion, and now fleshed out here by Rabbi Avadia, says that's very nice. But the status, the category we're looking at legally is not Machal Shabbos, but is the siman, which is kofar by Maaseh Bereishis, which comes back to your point, right? It's not just that the Ben Yonzion is making a legal jump. He's also making a Metzius jump. He's also making a legal claim, which he's opting to understand the category of Machal Shabbos substantively and not formally, right? Which is critique number one of the Minchas Elazar, but most poskim have followed him in that, which is what you see from Rav Avadia. Right? Shezeu ikra atam shedin Machal Shabbos ka'akum. And then he quotes a lot of people who say that. I just gave it to you so you can look at some of the other people. Next paragraph. Umasha calls of Oda Minchas Elazar Hasak Adiv Mary Asad. And Minchas Elazar critiques again. He says, Shein l'dchosim b'shtei adayim. And now we get to the sociological question that Reuven was hinting at. That part of the impetus for accepting a psak like this is not just that we have to deal with them, but we want to have them as part of our community in some way, shape, or form, either because they're Jews or because we want to be Makari of them, and we hope to, that, you know, everyone will return to Shomer Torah Mitzvos. So the Mari Asad says that one of the reasons that he's looking for kulos, and this should recall to you our discussions of Psikat Halacha B'Sharat Chak, where he's claiming up front that he's not just motivated by the legal claim, but by a recognition of the totza'ah that he wants. If you remember, we said that what typifies Psikat Halacha B'Sharat Chak is that it's goal-oriented. Right? Not that it's disingenuous, but that it has a goal in mind. So the Mari Asad claimed that one of the reasons he wants to be mekil is because he doesn't want to push them away b'shtei adayim. So what does the Minchas Elazar say? Because of she'en lanu lachosh l'kari v'aposhim. That's very nice, but I don't agree with your goal. You want to bring them closer. I want to push them away. She'adarava zeuch shasher gazur chazal. Wait, why is a mumr l'chal Shabbos? Why is his wine like that of a non-Jew? Because you want to get rid of him. You don't want people to learn from him. Kadesh Lamed Omi Masav. So he said, V'anu Nekum V'nevat Al Zos B'Svaras Crazy Yosu L'Hadir. So we're going to say what they call in Yiddish, Boich Svaras, right? Which is something that you just say from your stomach, right? You don't think about it. It comes from here, not from here, right? Kadesh Anuchal Itzchaber Yimam L'Karavim Bizroa. And you're going to come up with new lambdas so that you can bring them closer forcefully. Then you're going to learn from their bad ways. Right? Let them scatter to the world. I don't care. So what does Rav Avadia claim? Yeah, Rav Avadia says, well, what was the basis of Yaakov Endlinger's claim? Was that this is parallel to the case of the Karaim of the Rambam? The Rambam himself didn't suffice with purely setting a legal precedent. What did he do? He also told you what motivation he had. Right? What motivations you'd have when dealing with them, and what did he say? You shouldn't push them away. You should bring them back. So, right, point two here is that this, and here's where you start seeing the psikara l'chabishat chag aspect, that there is an agenda going on, is that one of the reasons we want to be mekil is because we want to bring them closer. But if you have a different agenda, then obviously you're going to be pushed to paskin the opposite way, right? The Minchas Elazar is not just arguing legally, but he's arguing about the goals of the psak. The next paragraph, Mashkozim Minchas Elazar l'chalek the shiny akor from Shabbos Manenu la'karem shishochan medina she'en sham Yisrael v'heim umam b'fnei atzma. The Minchas Elazar further said, the Reformed Jews are not like Karaites. Why? Because v'yevshar lahem leida klam minag Yisrael. The Karaites lived separate from us. Is this true historically, by the way? No, it's not at all true historically. So this is where, if you remember, the importance of understanding history. And he claims that the Karaites were separate from the Jews, and that's why it wasn't so important for us to set up clear demarcations, and why we can legitimately say that they don't know about Torah. How do we know that that's not true? What have we found many of in the Karaganiza? Karaite? Karaite Jewish, Karaite Rabbinic joint ksubos, right, which set the parameters of what will, this Karaite will marry this rabbinic Jew, and they agree to keep the Karaite practices on Shabbos and not have a fire going. And they agree to keep the rabbinic laws of Nida, which are more machmir. Right? There's a pshara going on. Right? There are ksuvos which delineate exactly how they lived very much together. So historically, he's just not right. So if you remember when we talked about the importance of understanding history, so you want to use historical precedent, you better understand the historical precedent you're using, because otherwise you're just going to get it wrong. Which happened here. And Rav Ovadia says, Rav Ovadia who does understand history says, "Mimechilas kavatarazo ein varav nechonim." That's not true. Ki aloha karim him smuchim rechova yudim mitzrayim. They were right there. V'chein haya gam bizman harambam. And that was what was going on in the Rambam. So don't try to tell me that this model is not good. In fact, it's exactly what was going on in the time of the Rambam.
Who's he arguing against
him? Minchas Lazar, the Rebbe Munkach. Dov. Hi, Dov.
So I'm just going to go back at the end of the
shift. Oh, sure. The Torah Barim's table?
Yeah, to me, whatever.
Okay, fine. Okay. Tov. So, how much time do we have? 15 minutes? 10 minutes?
14.
15. Good. We're doing really well.
14.
Okay. So, to review this and just talk about methodological issues. Right? Mid-19th century, we had the rise of denominations, which represents a clear sociological change. Okay, so Rav Yaakov Edler is faced with this problem, and he does what any good posek does when faced with a new sociological change. So he examines whether that sociological change has halachic implications. If it does, what is the category we were dealing with? What category do we want to deal with? And he makes first of all the legal claim that Mechalel Shabbos is a substantive category, a siman for kofar ma'aseh bereishis kofar b'kadosh baruch hu. Notes that in reality, that's not true of Reform and conservative Jews. They tend to believe in God. They tend to believe in creation. Haraya, they drive to shul and then say kiddush. So he makes that legal claim and therefore makes the sociological claim. Then he looks for a new category and he finds it in the Rambam's claim about Karaites that they are tinok shenishba. In addition to the pure legal argumentation, there is, as Maria Saad points out, there's the element of psikat halacha b'sharat chak, is that there's not just a good halachic argument, there's an answer that we want to come to, which is some way of keeping other denominations integrated into our community. So, because both of the strength of this halachic argument, which is actually very strong, and the strength of the outside factors, it becomes, except in Germany, you see it becoming accepted around the world, in America already in the mid-19th century. By the time of Ramosha, it's pretty obvious. Ramosha points out that just because of that, right, that doesn't mean that everything is mutter. You still have to wonder, for example, about Aliyot, where it might require people to actually assert their belief, and their belief is much more important. Then you have the critique, which is on both levels. First of all, critiquing the legal arguments, but also critiquing the Psikat halacha b'sharat chag goals. Minchas Elazar says, first of all, it's a formal category, and therefore Reform Jews still fit in it. Second of all, I want to count them in it, because you are trying to be makel because you want to bring them closer. I want to be machmir because I want to push them away. The other methodological thing comes up is when you're looking at precedent, you have to understand history, because otherwise you're going to make a mistake. And Chazal Lazar claims that Reformed Jews are not like the Karaites, because they were separate, so there was no way they were going to figure out halacha, so we can really think about them in Tinuk Shenishba, and Reformed Jews are not. But this is simply not true, as Rav Ovadia points out. I gave you here the Yalkut Yosef, who, just because the Chazon Ish is not on Bar Ilan, where he adds, famously, the Chazon Ish is also dealing with the same problem from a slightly different angle. And the Chazon Ish claims that Bizman Hazeh, people who don't believe in God, are not in the category of Moridin Velo Malin. Look all the way at the end of the paragraph. This is a little bit of a different formulation, but it is related, obviously. And even if, in fact, they are Kofrim, right, we don't have Moridin Velo Malin, because She'ain Din Zel Bizman Shakochas Hashem Yisbarach Haisa Gluya. That's only when God's presence is clear in the world. Come up Bizman Shahi Anisim Mitsuyim Gluyim Misham Shemavasko Tzike Dor Hayim Nagim Vashkocha Prates and Ears Lain Kol. That was when, you know, there were open miracles. Az Haya Biur Rishaim Gidro Shel Olam. And therefore, you had to get rid of Rishaim of Bizman Hayalein. But when God is hidden, Shenichrasa Amuna Midal Zaham, and you know, people don't really believe. And Haga He Vester Panim, and God is running the world. Hidden, ain b'maisa as a geder pirtza, el osav as a pirtza, to attack a kofar would be, cause greater harm than good. L'chein aleinu l'achshir l'muta v'ozaz avas, so instead you should love them and bring them closer, l'amid them b'keren, ora ad kama sh'edeinu magaz. There are some problems with the Chazon Ish, but even the people who actually don't believe this tends to be the attitude, l'halacha. Okay, we have 10 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So now, I want to talk, straightforward about some of the methodological issues that come up in terms of applying this category today. Okay? So now, what's the obvious problem? Well, let's talk about the problems with taking this category and figure out to what extent they factor into Psak, and we'll talk a little bit how Pesukim actually deal with it. So, the claim that non-religious Jews are Tinuk Shenishba is predicated on what assumptions?
Ignorance.
To some level, ignorance.
All right. They grew up in that.
Right, they grew up in that sect.
That they have rationale behind what they're doing.
Yeah. So now, Bizman Hazeh. Right, there are a lot of poskim who start questioning the Tinuk Shenishba. Why? Right. Remember, if we want to talk about the main factor here being the realities, we have to talk about the reality. What's the problem?
There's a lot of information out there.
A lot of information. More than that, right? Modern state of Israel is not just that there's information out there. Right, what's the state religion officially? What type of Judaism? To the extent that there is a state religion.
Orthodox
Judaism, right? There's many people who believe in the, right? The only types of rabbis that are legitimate are Orthodox rabbis. I just ignore them, right? But the official religion is Orthodox Judaism. The Rabbanut is Orthodox. Which means that it's much more difficult to talk Bizman Hazeh about Tinuk Shenishba in the sense of ignorance. So what do you have to make the claim instead? Right? That it's Tinuk Shenishba because culturally they have no way of breaking out of their false consciousness. Right? So to speak, to use a Marx term, right?
I don't agree that it's not ignorance. I mean, they might not know something about Shabbos out there, but they definitely don't know
they don't need to know that halachos. I mean, the question is, do they have any way of becoming Shomer Torah mitzvos? Is that something that's too great to expect?
The information is there, but I don't think that. But it's not in their face. So
here's the struggle. Right? Some posts can say what I just say and say no. I'm not, by the way, taking a position. I'm just assessing it, right? And saying no, Bizmanas, they're not Tinuk Shenishba because they know what Orthodox Judaism is, right? If they read the Pew study, they know we're the most powerful, up-and-coming denomination. That should give them reason to pause and question their views. If they don't, that's their fault. Other people say, what are you talking about? They may know about the existence of Orthodox Jews, but they grew up in a world, not just Jewish, where the claims of any Orthodox religion are questioned. To break out of that consciousness is not something that we can expect of people. Right? They don't, in a existential way, come into contact with Orthodox Judaism in a way that would even give them a havamina to compel them. So that's one type of question, which is the sociology the same? What did we mean? What was the sociology behind the claim to begin with? Another claim. Dov Linzer has an article where he says, well, let's play it out. Right? If you claim the non-religious Jews are Tinoko Shenishba, what are you essentially claiming? That we don't expect people to break out of the beliefs they were raised in. One second. So he said, but if that's the case, what would you say about Orthodox Jews? By claiming the non-religious Jews are Tinuk Shenishba, because you can't expect someone to break out of religion, the beliefs they were raised with, what does that say about religious Jews? Does that mean that we can't take credit for being religious Jews because we were raised this way?
And right. The opposite for people that don't, that become irreligious.
Right? Well, I'll hold that thought for one moment. Right? So he claims that we should abandon this category because the implications of the category, right, are philosophically problematic. So he claims we should take the other formulation of the Binyan Tzion, which is Omer Mutter, and just say, no, what it is that the world is secular and doesn't believe that religion is binding. And people are sort of stuck in a category of Omer Mutter. Rav Yoel Ben Nun also was bothered by this and has an article where he very succinctly says, what's the problem? Heim lo tinokos veheim lo nishbu. Right? They're neither babies nor were they captured. Right? So he comes up with a completely different category, and he notes the Ramban al Torah says that there's a category, or the Pasuk brings a case of a nation who is shogeg in all the mitzvahs of the Torah. Chazal say that is when all of Klal Yisrael sin in Avodah Zarah, which is shoved called the Kol HaTorah Kula. But the Ramban says, in addition to that, there's a karban brought if a kahal gadol within Klal Yisrael literally just sin in Kol HaTorah Kula. So he comes up with a totally new category and says, maybe what's truest is to say no. Their denominations create a kahal shogeg, a group which systematically has come up with an ideology that is flawed, which makes them say Omer Mutter. It's very similar structurally to Rabbi Lenz's argument, but Kedarko Bakodesh, in his halachic methodology, starts with Pshuto Shel Mikra, right? Now, the big problem that a lot of people have is what you raised, is all of these categories make it difficult to deal with people who are Chozer B'Sheila, and people who go off the Derech, because they grew up Orthodox, so they're definitely not Tinok Shadishba. Right? So some people say, in Ochanami, people who go off the Derech are not Tinok Shadishbu. But other people say, what? Right? Think about the other categories. Well, either they still believe in God, so they're not fully, you know, Kofrim, but other people basically say something like that, not exactly those words, but like based on like the Chazon Ish, right? What is the Chazon Ish's argument? The Chazon Ish's argument is no, it's not that, right, they couldn't know that. Why does the Chazon Ish say that people don't have Moridim Lomalim Bezman Hazeh? Not because they couldn't know, but because the world functions differently. He makes a spiritual claim, right, that the world doesn't have open miracles. But Rav Kook makes the claim basically, look, the world is secular, right? We can't really get through to people when the dominant culture is secular. So even if people grew up religious, we can't hold them culpable in the same way that we used to, because we can't really blame them. They maybe have grown up religious, but they grew up in a secular world and they were exposed to it.
But they're not saying that they're not religious. They're just trying to distort the religion. It's the most disgusting act then. And Reformed Jews are the people that we should keep pushed out to the furthest place. I mean, irreligious and people that are...
Wait. What? Start again. You have to start back on that in a sentence.
I mean... The point that you were just trying to...
Which point?
About Rav Kook and the Chazon Ish is that we're living in a culture today that's completely secular.
Ah, so...
But they're not trying to... They're trying to secularize our religion...
So now... Right, so if you remember the Minchas Elazar's claim is... No, those people are the worst, because they're... But what's the distinction that people tend to make, right, between the rabbis, right, or the people who started the movement, and then people after it? Because it's true that they may be pushing a distorted view, but there's two questions. One is, how bad is what they're doing for Judaism? The second question is, how bad are they as people? Now, those are two separate questions, right? The people who started are obviously, right, no one has quite come to terms with the people who start new denominations, right? But in Hanami. Now, and this is, but what you're saying is something you really have to keep in mind is, and, right, the Minchas Al-Azhar's critique at some level does start to resonate when you have people who are actively promulgating other denominations in order to distort Torah, right? That in a Hanami, right? I'm not denying that. So what's happened sort of post, even though Tinok Shanishma became the relevant category that everyone adopted, is the question is, first of all, there were the people who critiqued it originally, both on halachic grounds and on sort of meta-halachic grounds. But there's also the questions, does it apply Bizman Hazeh? Right? That is both because of changes in Metzias. It's a question of what did we originally mean, right, when we said they were Tinok Shanishma, right? Is that category broad enough to include people who are Chozer B'Sheilach, right, or go off the Derech? And your point, right, which is, right, is it more damaging to us, right, to bring them in when they really are actively distorting the religion? And then we have to wonder, can we distinguish between the movement and the people, and then we might have to distinguish between followers and leaders, between first generation and second generation. So even though the Binyan Tzion really became the dominant position, right, that hasn't stopped the dialogue, because as Metzias keeps changing, both in terms of why people go off the derech, why people are not from, right, what it means to be not from, what the sociological cost of keeping them in the community, of kicking them out of the community, as those change, obviously, since this is such an issue where all these issues were very relevant in the original psak, equally, we have to continue to rethink it and to figure out whether it continues to apply. We will continue next week.